This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren is in the Zoom room with us from Cambridge. Senator Warren, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
It's great to be with you. And listen, this is serious business. There's a lot of policy that I want to talk about, but I want to have a little fun first because I have been thinking about sweet, fluffy Bailey in all of this heat, that poor pooch with all that fur. So how is Bailey doing in the heat?
So we, like all good people who work for our dogs, set the alarm, got up really early this morning so he could do the full loop of Fresh Pond before it got too hot. And now he is literally lying on top of one of the air conditioning vents.
To cool back off again.
Yeah, you know, it's a tough life for a golden retriever.
That's right.
His job is to be loved, and he's good at it.
Well, now that I've gotten my Bailey fix, thank you. We can get down to business. And I'm going to start with a couple of local news issues. I'm sure you're aware, here in the Commonwealth, the state legislature ended session with the $4.5 billion economic development bill still in limbo. There were some things in that, like permanent tax cuts, a potential seat on the MBTA board for the city of Boston, housing benefits, a whole bunch of stuff. There's been pressure that they ought to return. State Senate President Karen Spilka has said there's more work to do. They ought to come back. But today's Boston Globe editorial quotes House Speaker Ron Mariano as saying, quote, "People have vacation plans. I'm not going to start negotiating winners and losers of the economic development bill in the first week of August," end quote. As somebody working on the federal front, do you feel like the legislature should be back in business taking care of this? Or do you think there's time in informal session?
You know, that's the real question. Do they have another period of time that they have mapped out where they can straighten this out? If not, this is the job, like it or not.
And you do feel it needs to be straightened out?
It's got to be straightened out. And look, they've done some really terrific work. The particular one I saw is that, as you know, just last week, we managed to pass through a bill for veterans around burn pits, people who had been exposed to all kinds of toxic chemicals at these burn pits around the world, where the United States was in conflict, and finally getting them the appropriate relief. And the state legislature moved in, which I thought was really smart, and has a veterans bill that they've just passed in order to make sure that all of our veterans here in Massachusetts can get hooked into this new law right away, get the relief they want with as quickly as possible, and get everything they deserve. So I'm really happy to see this from the state legislature, but we got to have all the pieces working.
So let's stay with that then. You brought up this veterans bill, the PACT Act, which sits on President Biden's desk. Just for listeners, it provides health care and benefits to veterans injured by exposure to toxins at war. They don't have to prove the source of the injury, adds 23 conditions to the VA's list of presumptive illness. I want to look at the politics of this.
Sure.
There was an earlier version. It had passed with bipartisan support. There was a technical error that required another vote in Senate last week. And in the second vote, 25 Republicans switched sides. And I want to play you a little sound. You may have heard it before, of John Stewart, the famous John Stewart, who's been an advocate on veterans policy, reacting to that switch strongly on the problem with John Stewart.
Every one of these individuals that has been fighting for years to just get the health care and benefits that they earned from their service. And I don't care if they were fighting for our freedom. I don't care if they were fighting for the flag. I don't care if they were fighting because they wanted to get out of a drug treatment center or it was jail or the army. I don't give a shit. They lived up to their oath. And yesterday they spit on it in abject cruelty. These people thought they could finally breathe.
So obviously there, and I do want to correct, the new show where he's been reporting is the problem with John Stewart. Obviously some very strong reaction there at the thought that this might have been gamesmanship in protest to the compromise on the Inflation Reduction Act. Do you think this was gamesmanship?
Yes.
And are you angry?
It was gamesmanship. I mean, and look, let me explain exactly how we know that. The bill that they voted for originally had nothing changed when the Republicans, 25 Republicans, then voted against it and tanked it. Nothing changed. And then when they got a lot of heat publicly, not just from John Stewart, but from lots of veterans all around the country, they voted in favor of it again. And there were no changes in the bill. This was not like, oh, we compromised and we added some more conditions or some more money. It's the same bill three times, for which the Democrats, all of us, voted yes, 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 all three times. But the Republicans in the middle voted no because they were unhappy that the Democrats were going forward with a climate prescription drug tax bill that they didn't want us to go forward on. So they just decided they would take it out on the veterans. I don't know what else you call that, except political gamesmanship, the worst kind of cynicism. I thought it was just despicable.
So for the playbook, for those who supported the veterans bill, John Stewart proved to be a really effective advocate on that. Are there lessons to be learned for other pieces of the legislative agenda in the Biden administration, for our congressional delegation, in the relentlessness of his platform in pursuing this?
Yeah. And I think you really have focused on it. It's not so much about John Stewart. It's about what it means when the rest of us get roused on it, when people across the country, in this case, veterans and veterans organizations, they were in 110%. John Stewart was the tip of the spear, and good for him and very, very grateful. But what gave it power was not a celebrity endorsement. It was the fact that literally millions of people across this country were activated. They knew it. They didn't like it. They wanted to push back. They said it's time for Congress to act. And by golly, they got it done. In a sense, that's exactly how democracy should work. Someone talks about a piece of something that's happening, and then other people get engaged. And this is a way for Washington not just to hear. We could hear if we wanted to all the time, but a way to really push Washington so that Washington isn't just working for the billionaires who hire all the lobbyists and make all the campaign contributions, but is actually working for the American people.
So I'll pick up on that thread of millions of people around the country who are exercised, because certainly that is the case on abortion. I'm going to bounce us back and forth, local and national, on this one. Governor Charlie Baker will have a signing ceremony today codifying further action on abortion here. A couple of the key pieces there: more clarification about what is a legal abortion after 24 weeks, more protections for providers against reach-outs, criminal reach-outs from other states who might want to reach into this state for prosecutions. I know you know that last week the vice president held Massachusetts up as a model. Are you satisfied with where the state law is around abortion rights in Massachusetts?
Yeah, I think the state law is in a good place, and or about to be in a very good place here in Massachusetts. But I always want to sound the warning about no one is sure what will continue to unravel. We're in the first wave of the post-Roe world, and we still live in an environment where Mitch McConnell says that if the Republicans can seize control of Washington, then they're going to ban abortion all across the country. And it won't make any difference what Massachusetts has done. They will make all abortions, illegal here in Massachusetts, illegal in Kansas, illegal in Illinois, illegal in California. So we've got that part of it that we still have to be very, very vigilant on. And that's about the races that are coming up, the elections. In, what is it now, 96 more days?
Yeah,
when
just
we
about
have
3 months. So
yeah, exactly.
I'm glad you brought that up. So the phrase you use, no one is sure what will continue to unravel. So there has been a bipartisan bill aimed at protecting some abortion rights called the Reproductive Freedom for All Act. You are not in favor of that one. You're calling instead for President Biden to codify those rights through executive action. And I get it, in your criticisms of it, that for one who wants extensive abortion rights, it puts right against right now. And you've said it doesn't really change the law where it is. But if it can further codify something that does exist, given what else you don't know will unravel, why not support it in the short term on your way to a more fuller accomplishment of the agenda you'd like to see?
Well, the problem is it doesn't offer any protection. It uses the same undue burden standard that the court was using, or that, for example, the state of Mississippi used when it said no abortions at all after 12 weeks, and that John Roberts, in his concurring opinion, said, hey, we can go ahead and let Mississippi do that under the undue burden standard that is in this so-called compromise bill. Mm-hmm. Same kind of thing with Texas. As long as a bill in Congress says, hey, the courts can go bless whatever the state legislatures do under the undue burden test, then we haven't advanced the ball at all. Indeed, I think we've made it worse, because we've said now the legislature's stepping in and saying to this extremist Supreme Court, keep it up, only use the language undue burden instead of flatly declaring that Roe is gone. But it would still unleash the states, as many of them already have been, to continue to ban abortions. And that's why I just can't support it.
We're talking with Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren here on WBUR. Senator Warren, you said you referred to 12 weeks in Mississippi. I think it's 15 unless undue burden
is three weeks sooner.
Okay. So I do want to pick up one more thing on this subject, which has to do with crisis pregnancy centers. This summer, you introduced the bill Stop Anti-Abortion Disinformation Act that you said would limit these centers from using advertising to dissuade women from getting abortions and have to disclose that they don't provide those services. At least some centers here in the Commonwealth are licensed. They argue that they're transparent in their materials about their approach and that in some cases they do provide medical services like ultrasounds. Have you been invited to visit a crisis pregnancy center in Massachusetts? And have you gone to see one? Have you engaged directly with one of these centers?
No, I have not been invited. But let me be clear. If they are transparent that these are not centers that provide abortion services, then we don't have a problem. My concern is that someone's pregnant, they're under a lot of stress, they want to terminate this pregnancy, and they type in on their Google search, abortion services, where can I get an abortion, what does an abortion cost? And the first thing that crops up says, we help with crisis pregnancies. We can give you full information. You go to the website. The website uses the word abortion over and over and over. Someone makes an appointment and goes in, gives all of their personal information and medical information, believing that they are in a center that will provide an abortion, and only find deep into the process that they are not. They are in a center that is, in some cases, willing to give inaccurate medical information in order to keep this person from having an abortion.
And
And when they leave, they then have given up personal information, medical information, that if these are not healthcare centers, which most of them are not bound by federal HIPAA laws, privacy laws, which means they can do anything they want with that information, including giving it to other states. If someone, say, came in from Texas in order to receive an abortion here in Massachusetts, in order to harass a person.
Have you heard from a constituent that this has happened to?
I have talked with people who have, I want to put this very carefully. I have spoken with people who've had very troubling encounters with crisis pregnancy centers.
Thank you. I do want to pick up student loan debt before we run out of time, because the moratorium on payment end of August.
Yep.
Are you directly or currently in touch with the Biden administration about their plans for what comes next? Do you know what's on the horizon?
I'm not going to talk about private conversations, but I am going to say this. Let's go back to our conversation about the burn pits.
Yeah.
Why did we actually make something happen? We made it happen because people all across the country said that the Republicans blocking this was outrageous and it needed to stop. There were a lot of people who said the right thing to do is to support our veterans. The more people who say in the next few days or few weeks, it is important to cancel a big chunk of student loan debt. It is important to help people get rid of this debt, then the more likely it is that this debt will be canceled.
Would a 10K chunk? No, so there's been back and forth. President Biden for a long time has talked about something around the 10K range. You, Massachusetts Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, who was on with us last week, she advocated for 50. That seems to be where you've been. If you can get 10, will you take 10?
Look, let me put it this way. The reason I focus so hard on 50, and so does Ayanna, is that this is where we get the maximum impact. That is, the greatest number of people who will see their debt wiped out, that we will begin to close the racial wealth gap, and we will give the most help to people who do not have college diplomas. Keep in mind, just a couple of quick things about student loan debt. 42% of the people who have student loan debt do not have a college diploma. They are trying to manage student loan debt on what you make as a high school grad. They tried, God bless them, and pregnancy, trying to work three jobs, somebody got sick, didn't make it through to get a college diploma. So they don't have those earnings. If the number is high enough, we can actually wipe out most of the debt for most of those people. Same point around the racial wealth gap. Right now, African Americans and Latinos borrow more money to go to school, borrow more money while they're in school, and have a harder time paying it off when they get out of school. One quick fact, 20 years out, the median white borrower owes about 6% of what they originally borrowed. You know, geez, after 20 years, still paying, but the end is in sight. The median Black borrower owes 95% of what they originally borrowed. If we get the number high enough, the Black-white wealth gap for borrowers can narrow by, at $50,000, by as much as 27 points. That's the most any president could do to help close the Black-white wealth gap in America. So right. That's why I keep pushing for a bigger number.
That's Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.